Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome to Work It, How to Be a Grown-Ass Podcaster, featuring panels from WNYC's first ever podcasting festival designed for creative women working in audio and digital media. Over the course of 2 days in June of 2015, WNYC brought together women leading the way in creating today's most innovative and groundbreaking podcasts. In this episode, it's Too Much Funny for One Room. Comedian Sarah Schaefer unites The Daily Show's Jessica Williams, Ask Polly's Heather Havrileski, and High Maintenance's Katja Blichfeld for a night of real talk.
Getting drunk!
Just kidding. Just a little buzzed. Hey, guys. Hey, well, hi. Hi. Oh, these are the people in charge. I just got nervous. Welcome to How to Be a Grown-Ass Woman. I did not come up with that title, but I also didn't like fight to change it, so here we are. Thank you for coming to the Green Space tonight. In just a moment, I'll be bringing out three amazing women to discuss and, you know, just like dig deep. But first, I want to tell you a little story about a moment where I really felt like, oh, I'm a grown-ass woman. A moment where I really feel like I had grown up. It happened when I turned 30. I know. I'm in my 30s. Can you believe it? Okay. I was expecting more shock from the audience than there was. When I turned 30, I got divorced, and yeah, that'll make you grow up real quick. Things changed. At the time, my number was one. Not my sleep number, but the number of people I had slept with. Yes, this is a story about sex. Deal with it. I just figured I'd get out the most inappropriate story up top so that our panelists could just feel free. I'd only had sex with one person at that time, and I was looking to greatly increase that number in a very short amount of time. I kind of felt like that old guy from Shawshank Redemption that got out of prison and was like, cars are faster now. People have cell phones. That was a thing that had changed from when I was single before to when I was single now. It was people were dating with cell phones. That wasn't a thing when I was 19. So I was like, oh, very quickly learned some things, like the proper amount of times to text someone in the first 48 hours of meeting them is not 57. But I felt like I had missed out on a lot of the normal dating experiences that people had gone through in their 20s. But at the same time, I had watched all of Sex and City plus the movies. And so I pretty much knew what was going on. I was an expert, okay, in dating. So I was like, well, let's face it. I had a lot of things to check off my fuck it list. So one of the things that I thought everyone had done in their 20s, I really thought this, turns out it's optional. I thought everyone had had a one-night stand with a total stranger that they had just met. I thought that was like normal behavior. So I was like, well, I gotta take care of this. Like I was acting like I was going to get a cavity filled, which if you think about it, so I went to a bar and I found a guy that I thought was pretty cute, and I'm not going to lie, I was hitting on him pretty hard, and by that I mean I stood next to him until the end of the night. And we went back to his place, and I don't want to get too graphic, this is WNYC, but we were full on doing it. And it was great. Not only because of the stranger danger, but because which made added some excitement to it, but because he was significantly younger than me. Ladies, I don't know if you've ever had that matchup. You gotta get you some of that tight young penis. That shit is good. Burn down your life if you have to. Just a suggestion. So I didn't feel like a cougar so much as a she-wolf. And I was like, we need to take this to the next level. And I thought, you know, it's going so well, why don't I put in a request? I was feeling very adventurous. And I said, why don't you be a little rough? Okay, we're going there. Just calm down. Because I thought that meant, like, he would just, like, correct my posture into the sheets. Just, like, push my shoulders back a little bit. And, like, tug on my hair just a little bit. Call me a bad girl. And then kiss me gently all over my whole body. That's what I thought was going to happen. Seriously. But instead, he just punched me in the face. Just let that sink in for a second. No, no discussion. No contract was drawn up. There was no PowerPoint presentation. That's when I learned you should always have a safe word. Mine is don't punch me. Now I know this is going to sound controversial. I'm just going to say it. In a way, I did kind of ask for it. I know you're not supposed to say that. I know. But I did literally kind of ask for it. The way that, in the same way, hear me out, in the same way that if you went to a restaurant and you said to the waiter, have the chef surprise me. Is there some kind of D-bag that does that? Have the chef surprise me. And then they bring you a plate of steaming human feces. In a way, you did kind of ask for it. You are surprised in that moment. Technically, they just fulfilled your request. In a way, he was rough. Now, I know some people in here are very concerned about me right now. You're very uncomfortable and you're worried, but to that I just say, don't worry, he's dead. guys, that's when I knew. It was, I mean, I'm telling a very, haha, isn't that hilarious version of that story, but there was an aftermath where I was like, oh, I need to kind of realize that it's time to grow up and, like, actually figure these things out before I'm in the situation. But seriously, fuck that guy. But he shouldn't have done that. But also, you know, just I was like, oh, this isn't child's play. You know, I'm out there in the world and somebody's going to whip me if I don't specifically request that they don't whip me. So that's when I became a grown ass woman. When I was like, took a punch. That didn't end the way I wanted it to. But it was a moment, you know, where I was really had to figure out that, you know, dating in your 30s, that's no bullshit. You got to be ready. You got to be prepared. Don't watch 50 Shades of Grey. It won't help you. By the way, can I just make one comment about 50 Shades of Grey before we move on? My main question about that movie is, if you took away Christian Grey's wealth, abs, power, and piercing eyes, his behavior would be like she would have called 911, like in the first 10 minutes of the movie, right? Like, he straps her into a helicopter and says, no escaping now. Like, imagine if that was a balding, pudgy, like, guy from middle management. Everything he did would have been grounds for a restraining order. Anyway, so that's just a lesson we can learn. This is a teaching hospital, okay? I realized I need to get back to the script. all the pages are out of order. We were talking backstage that we all don't feel like grown women, and we're all of different ages. So maybe you guys can help us tonight figure it out. For instance, what page am I on? Here we go. All right, guys. Are you ready to learn how to be a grown-ass woman? Okay, good. Thank you so much for coming. I'm going to bring out our first guest. I'm going to move this here. Let me move my baba over here. Guys, our first guest. I'm so excited that she's here. I'm a huge fan. She writes the Ask Polly advice column for NewYorkMagazine.com's The Cut, which is a blog I love. She's a contributor to Book Forum and the New York Times Magazine, and she's also written a memoir called Disaster Preparedness. She's going to help us prepare for disaster. Please welcome Heather Havrileski, everybody. Heather! Tell us all your moment when you got punched in the face. No, when you felt like I'm a woman.
You know, I was just backstage watching you, and I'm ready to burn down my life right now. So I think I might be an adult now because I'm just ready to throw it all away.
Yeah.
This is kind of a sad story to contrast with her really happy story, Sarah's.
Yeah.
When I was about, let's see, how old was I? I'm 45. I just turned 45. I really am a grown-up. It's true, theoretically. But when I was about, I was just turned 40. And in some ways, getting married and having kids, you're sort of on your own. Until then, as a single woman and as a career woman, my career started I got kind of lucky early on and became a writer early on professionally. So I always supported myself. So I was very independent in the old days. But once you get married and have kids, in some ways, the responsibilities are sort of diffused a little bit. Like, you're not the only one who's taking care of everything. Especially when you're me and you don't like running errands. And so you tend to say things like, that's an errand, honey, you can do that. Or that sounds unsavory, why don't you handle that? Which I say a lot, sadly.
Give me an example of an unsavory task.
Picking up a jug of milk.
Awful.
I live in Los...
That is unacceptable for you to have to do.
I handle the finances. I like Excel a lot.
The program, Microsoft Excel.
Yes, I enjoy numbers. I like adding and subtracting numbers and thinking about numbers sometimes and just obsessing, laying in bed and just not. It's not about wealth accumulation. It's just about the numbers. How will the numbers? This is serious. My husband is perplexed by it. And I spend a lot, it's almost like meditation. Mm-hmm. So I deal with the finances, which is good because my husband is not a grown-ass man when it comes to finances, like many husbands you'll find, ladies. But my husband does take the kids to the doctor and the dentist because I don't know, doctors and dentists.
Unsavory.
They're usually, you know, doctors and dentists, that's who they are. So he does that. And so my one-year-old, I have two daughters, they're 6 and 8 now. But when my younger daughter was 1 year old, she had a cold, a really bad cold. And my husband took her to the doctor and he came back. And when he came back, My daughter sounded like Darth Vader, like this. And I was like, that still doesn't, that she sounds worse than she did when you went to the doctor. And he was like, oh yeah, she has croup. She's supposed to sound like that. I was like, supposed to sound like that. Interesting. So we went to bed, and because I'm a mother, it was like, But I slept, I'll admit it. It wasn't, I guess I'm a bad mother because I wasn't tossing and turning for hours. But I did wake up at 2 a.m. to the sound of a child going and crying and screaming. Oh. And I turned to my husband and I said, croup, well, I guess now we have to go to the emergency room. And he said, we? Because we had a 2-year-old daughter who obviously wasn't going to get dragged to the emergency room. And I thought in that moment, obviously I can't send the moron who I'm married to the emergency room with my dying daughter who can't breathe and sounds like Darth Vader with asthma. Mm-hmm. So I had to, I quickly start packing a bag and my husband is still like calling the on-call nurse. Let me just call the on-call. And I'm like, her lips look a little blue to me. Like oh, I'm kind of thinking we should just drive somewhere really fast. So I packed a bag which had like, you know, a shoe and a giant bottle of water and, you know, and I'm just like freaking out. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this alone. I can't do this. And I get in the car, and I had to drive like 10 minutes to Pasadena. And I get to Huntington, and there's construction. And so being someone who I don't ever get parking tickets ever anywhere for any reason, so I'm like, I'm just going to park in the parking structure.
There's no need to brag.
Well, see, sometimes being an adult or a grown-ass woman can turn on you because you don't want to break the rules, but it was a really, as it turned out, kind of stupid thing to park in the parking structure. So I park in the parking structure, and I'm like, oh, McDonald had a fart, you know, singing.
Trying to comfort your daughter, but it just comes out as like a creepy horror movie.
It's probably, yes, it's kind of like the, it's like some flight attendants when there's turbulence get that kind of it's fine everything's fine. So I'm running with my daughter and she weighs like 35 pounds, she's gigantic, and I'm like thinking in my head like calm down, and then I drop the bottle of water and it slips across the pavement. And I'm like kind of dive for it. And meanwhile, I run down this long emergency personnel only, you know, and I'm like, they're going to let me in. I know it. My daughter's dying. And I run and I'm pressing the button and no one comes. So then I've got to run all the way out. And now I'm just running down this blind alley. I don't even know where it goes. I just have a sense. Maybe the emergency room exit is that way. I don't even know. I'm just in the dark. There's nothing around. No parked cars, no people, nothing. And a part of my mind, being a woman, is like, I'm going to get raped on this.
Oh, my
which
God.
That would be, wow, that would be a twist, right?
Yeah.
Now that might top your story.
Yeah,
might.
That would be like, oh, this is a sad story, really. Wow.
So I'm running, and I have a baby, and the water bottle, and I lean over, and I almost drop the baby. And I'm like, and then I just start crying. And I think to myself, it's like a bad dream where you just think, I just want to, somebody save me. I'm going to crawl into a corner and die right now. Someone else needs to save me. I can't do this. I cannot save my daughter. I can't do anything. And I just thought, you are the adult in this situation. Your daughter will die if you don't get your fucking shit together right now. So I picked up my daughter. And I said, everything's fine. And I ran quickly. And in fact, I did a piece about CrossFit recently.
Totally, totally on point.
And they give you these kettlebells and they make you run with them. They gave me a 26-pound kettlebell.
That's
and
not okay.
I almost had like a PTSD kind of thing. Because I'm like running. I'm like, what does this remind me of? Why do I feel sad inside? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to stop this. This is crazy. You people are crazy. So I went into the hospital. And if you go into an emergency room, if you've ever gone into an emergency room and everyone in the emergency room turns to you and goes, oh, you've got a problem, you know? Mm. Like, I walk in, I'm crying, and I've got my water bottle, and my daughter looks terrible and is trying to breathe and crying also. And everyone turned, and people started crying. And they don't actually, there is a situation where they actually do lead you straight to the back. It was the one time I've ever been in an emergency room where, luckily, no one was beheaded in the room, so I got to go back. And it was fine. And a nurse said to me, your daughter's not going to die of this. If you had stayed at home, she might have, you know, because it's breathing. Apparent oxygen.
It's important.
Super important to the human body. Mm. Weird, right? My husband didn't know that. He's a professor of science education at UCLA. Hi, honey. So, yeah. Don't marry a man, I think, is the moral of the story. That's what grown-ups do. Grown-ups don't marry men. That was pretty sexist to me. Sorry.
No.
Yeah, but you know, there are those times when you just have to say to yourself, no one's going to save me. I just got punched in the face, for example.
Mm-hmm. I got the hell out of there, by the way. I didn't stay and cuddle or, you know.
See, that's, I've stayed in
cuddle. He tried to. I mean, he immediately was like, let's spoon. I was like, no.
He felt closer to you.
Oh, yeah. He was all like, you're so beautiful. I want to take you to Amsterdam tomorrow. And I was like, no. The part I left out is that he's a child star, and I didn't know that until the next day when I Googled him. So anyway.
Lesson number two, don't ask for rough stuff from a child star. We're already learning
he
so much.
He was an adult. I didn't statutorily rape him. He looked very young, though, which is disturbing to me.
But you did, didn't you say something like, burn down your life, get the hot young Willie, or something like that?
Yeah, it was fun.
Was that a lesson?
Oh, yeah.
Burn down your life is the lesson. Get the baby.
Get yours. That's what a man would do. He'd go boff his secretary, his young secretary, and then you're out in the cold. And that's not going to happen to you.
That's true, Dad. Damn straight it's not.
He needs you to do the numbers.
That's true. Creative dependency is rule number three. Yeah. Creative dependency.
Yeah. Heather, that story was not only hilarious, but a great moment. Like, you know, when you realize you have to woman up.
Yeah.
Man up. Okay, anyway. This is going great.
I want to be you. You don't want to be me. It's perfect.
I want to be you. I loved that invitation of the
who doesn't flight attendant. Do this?
I wish you, anyone who's not watching this, you missed it. Okay, next up, are you done? I don't know how to.
Not even close.
I don't know. I did not prepare transitions at all, as you can tell.
I can do a tap dance.
You tap dance while I bring up the next. Okay. Hilarious, smart, amazing woman. She is the co-creator, writer, director of the series High Maintenance, which you can see online, and soon it will be on HBO, moving up in the world. She's won an Emmy as the casting director for 30 Rock. I did audition in front of her one time and did not get the part, so I will be confronting her tonight. Please give it up for Katja Bleckfield, everybody. Welcome. Oh, you're so pretty.
Aww,
I love
thank
that
you.
Dress.
Thank you.
Having heard our stories, mm-hmm. top it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. I was actually standing back there in that power pose. You all saw that TED Talk, right?
Pose.
I was like, my doctor fucked up a prescription situation for me today. So I didn't get to take that, like, half a Xanax that I normally take for these events. And I was like, I'm a grown-ass woman. I can do this. I can talk to a group of people without the aid of pharmaceuticals.
I thought you were going to say, he fucked up my prescription, and I am rolling right now.
Could you imagine?
I was like, yes.
No, but listening to you, that was a great story, by the way. I also enjoyed your flight attendant moment. I feel a little insecure because my moment isn't, I don't have like a, my moment feels more abstract, if I could say that. I don't feel like I had that like, aha, like this is where I'm a grown ass woman. I feel like it's more, well, I should just say it, right?
Just
I should
say
just
it.
Talk. Okay.
We need some abstraction now.
Okay, yeah.
I think everyone's kind of thirsty.
Things
for
were a little too detailed
actually, yes.
before.
I like the details. I wish I had more details to bring. And I was really thinking about this. I didn't have like an immediate moment that came to mind. But what I was thinking about was how I started to feel like a grown-ass woman when I realized that I had been in this world for a while and that my experiences were valid and that I could sort of, well, I should go back. So I was in casting for, as she mentioned, for a really long time, for like a decade, and I was doing really well and I sort of had reached the place that I had wanted to be. Emmy, hello, that's really cool. And yeah, you don't need to woo that. I mean, it's great, but I'm not trying
we
to like
an
get
Emmy
a woo.
On the same night. I won one too.
I know. We danced together and it was awesome. We did. We danced together
we
that night.
It was really
great.
Fun. I won an Emmy. Okay, anyway,
she
continue.
Did. Yeah.
And I didn't win an Emmy.
Yeah, and I had sort of gotten to the place that I'd been trying to get to for so long and everything was going great and but on the side, I'd sort of been cultivating this side project, which High Maintenance was the side project at the time, and it was not a money-making endeavor. It still hasn't really been a money-making endeavor. It's about to change. I know. I realize that. I'm very excited to make some money of any kind.
Yeah.
But I kind of did have that moment where I got offered some cool casting jobs, the sort that I really had fantasized about for so long and had been working toward, and kind of had to start saying no and stepping away and saying no to certain opportunities that I thought really would be the ones that would, you know, bring me to the next place that I wanted to be, in favor of devoting more time to this, to the side project, to High Maintenance, that was a project I was doing with my husband, and I was sort of just doing it on the, you know, on the weekends and wherever I had time. And, you know, there wasn't any promise of any financial reward attached to it. There were a lot of people that when I started sort of stepping back from my actual career job, who sort of questioning that, parents in particular, but other people as well who were sort of looking at me a little with a side eye like, oh. I mean, I know people thought I was being totally naive at the time for saying no to things that would, you know, pay my bills and ostensibly further my career. And I was choosing to do this thing that I actually didn't have a lot of experience in doing and had not had training in doing, really. I mean, not formal training, but I realized I had, you know, accidental training. And I remember I felt like very defensive a lot when people would talk to me about like, oh, what are you doing right now? And what are you working on? And I would talk about this project.
I have this little thing that I'm doing.
Yeah, totally. That was me. I was like, oh, this little web series. And I was like kind of embarrassed to talk about it because like everybody has a web series. And I was like, oh, there's another person with a web series. And but there was something inside of me that knew that my heart was sort of pulling me in this direction. And I sort of started surveying the rest of, you know, my life before that. And thinking about just how I had ended up where I was. And it was a series of decisions based on gut intuition over and over again. And a lot of those decisions I realized were similar in that they didn't make a whole lot of sense on the page. And I realized, oh, I've kind of lived my whole life in this defense mode, having to sort of explain myself for why I'm doing these things that don't make a lot of sense, but I feel the pull towards doing these things. And I don't know, I just kind of had a realization like, oh, I have wisdom. Like I've collected some wisdom and I'm like in my 30s and like I know some things and I can like look back over my life and see how me following my intuition has yielded these like incredible results time and time again, even when they didn't, you know, even when those said decisions didn't make a lot of sense in the moment. And I think that's kind of when I felt like, oh, I'm a grown woman, because I can sort of look and see that I've accumulated these experiences and that they've yielded wisdom, and that wisdom is worth listening to, and my intuition is worthwhile and worth listening to, and I'm just going to trust in that and do it. And I did, and I mean, obviously, it's worked out pretty great. But yeah, I think that was, for me, what has defined my growing up moment, was realizing that I have wisdom and I know what's best for me, and other people don't know what's best for me. And that's that.
Wow.
Yeah.
If that story may not have been detailed, but way more inspirational than the other ones.
No, I don't know.
Offense, Heather, but damn.
Not as entertaining, I'm sorry.
No, I love that you said that, and because I think we wait a long time as women to be affirmative in mm-hmm. our decisions, and we, in many ways, wait for permission to do
yes.
things. And then when you start following that instinct and realizing it's real and vibrant and and good, that's when everything breaks open.
Yeah, totally.
It's so wonderful to hear that. And like I said backstage, I'll say it to everybody here. I've been, I live in Hollywood, and I have an Emmy, and I go on these meetings that are pointless, and
I want to do that.
They
I want to do that.
Meetings.
Bring me.
You go to meetings and you just talk, and then you leave, and you never hear from them again.
You drink so much water too. You
so
get
much
so
water.
Hydrated.
Always ask for the water. If they say, "Do you want water?" Say yes. Give me that water, because that's all you're getting out of it.
True.
There's a drought, so it's important.
Yeah. I know.
Drink the
no.
water.
Take
while
them
you
up on the water.
And don't give me bottled water. I want tap. I want to be depleting Los Angeles's supply. But in these meetings, time and time again, I have heard people say, "We want our version of high maintenance." I mean, you are an innovator in a way that you just made a web series that just struck this nerve and was so good and is so good and so
Thanks.
Special and that... Everybody wants you. All, that's what you want, is to make something that everybody wants to copy, and so congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That on becoming a grown ass woman.
Thank you.
And I'm making my own show about someone who deals ecstasy.
I would watch that, by the way.
Are you really?
No. Thank you, Katja. That was. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Now, before we get to our group discussion, our crossfire, we are going to bring out our final woman of the evening. She's a lovely person. She's a correspondent on The Daily Show. She's the youngest person to have ever earned that job. She's also the first Black woman to do so, and she's just powerful and beautiful in every way. Please give it up for Jessica Williams, everybody.
Really nice. Thank you. How's everybody doing?
Yeah.
That was a great story.
Thank you.
It was really good.
Thanks.
Congratulations.
Jessica.
Yes, ma'am.
When did you know you were a grown-ass woman?
You know what? Like you, I sort of had this idea. I moved to New York for The Daily Show from L.A., and I had this idea that New York was going to be this really cool Sex in the City lifestyle, without sort of personally fielding if my morals lined up with the women of the show, which now that I'm older, no, of course not. They were working through a lot of stuff. But I when I moved to New York, it was really cold. It was a lot colder than I thought. And so I like to just stay inside and play The Sims. I just love The Sims.
I've been there.
It's so good. It's like Dolls, but except it's virtual and everything. It's amazing. So I was inside a lot. And then one of my best friends moved into town. And she likes to go out. She's a party animal. And so when she moved into to town, I was like, yes. Hell yeah, I'm going to finally have that Sex and the City lifestyle that I haven't had, because I'm normal. And so she and I went to this, we went like to a couple bars. My sister flew into town and it was her birthday, so we celebrated that with her. My sister went off to some like nightclub. She met like a really hot African and was like, this is my ticket, I'm gonna get with him. So she went with this African somewhere to this really cool party. And my best friend Sally and I, we went to this nightclub and we were in Williamsburg, and this guy starts coming up to her and he's talking to her and he's like super weird. He's giving me mad, like weird vibes. I'm like, yo, I don't like this homie at all. And my best friend, she was like sort of buzzed, and she was just like kind of talking to him. She's double fisting it. I was like, that's my girl. And I'm sort of watching from a distance. I'm like, yo, I'm gonna let her do her thing. Not gonna, you know, hate the game. Let's let that happen. Even though I didn't like that dude. So anyway, she's talking to the guy. He's like getting a little handsy. I know he's not supposed to be a little handsy. So I'm like, yo, 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 back up a little bit. And then he's like, So, because what else do they do except for, and then they're all just a blur of the same person. And so I'm with her, and I noticed maybe 5 minutes later that she's starting to fall around everywhere. I've drank with her through college. Like, I know how she holds her liquor. This is something, like, that I've never seen before. So she is just beyond sloppy. It's finally closing time. The bartenders are closing out. There's not really anybody there. And this guy is still fucking lingering. I'm like, this dude's a stage five. Like, get. And so I'm trying to, like, carry her. Because I'm like, this is a whole new level for her. Trying to carry a wrap her arm around me. We're walking out, and the bouncer's like, yo, that girl don't look good. Because she starts to try and, like, get her bike unlocked from the front of the club, and she's trying to mount, and the bouncer's like, uh-uh, that don't look right. And the guy sort of snakes in, because he's been hawking her all night, and he's like, you want me to get her home? I can get her home. I can totally get her home. And I was just like, no, dude, fuck off. Like, this is my friend. I can do it. And so my best friend sort of kind of gets on the bike. I'm like, you can't do this. Like, let me help you. So I grab her bike, and I'm holding her over my like, kind of holding her too. And we're, like, teetering this bike up 10 blocks of Williamsburg to get to her apartment. And I live, like, a block away from her. So we get to her like, apartment, and she lives in this sort of really cool Williamsburg loft sort of deal, where it's one of those elevators that you grab and you pull it all the way up, like a freight elevator, you know, where it's like, this is impractical and a bit much, but it's cool.
Expensive.
Yeah, this is spicy. It's expensive. And we get in the elevator. We, like, it works the first time. The gate closes. We go up, like, four flights. Both gates open. We walk out. I drag her bike. She's like, trying to put her key in the keyhole. At this point, I'm like, oh, I think she's roofied. I think that she was roofied. And so she couldn't even get the key in the keyhole. She's like, you have to move it like this and then move it around like that. And I was like, okay, get out of the way. I try and get the key in the keyhole. I'm probably a little buzzed. I'm like, dude, you ain't got it. You know what? Let's go back to my place. We'll pass out in the tub. We'll wake up in the morning. Talk about how you totally got roofied. Talk about setting some boundaries. We get back in this big-ass freight elevator. This is, by the way, maybe like 4 in the morning. So she starts to reach up, and she's pulling down this freight elevator. Again, she has no motor skills at this point. So I'm like, out of the way, I got this. And I reach up, I grab the outer door, and it really needed my body weight, so I pulled down like as hard as I could. And all of a sudden, there was two gates. So the second gate, the inner gate, comes in, and it just slams right on my arm. And I just remember I had brought my new job watch. Like, I brought, like, a Nixon watch, and I was like, this is what I'm going to get when I make it. And I bought it. And it just, like, snapped, and it fell down the shaft. And I was like, oh, fuck. But then I look, and I just feel negative space on my arm, which I've never felt before. It just feels negative. And I looked, and I just see blood just squirting out of my arm. I'd never seen that before in my life. And I was like, oh, shit, that doesn't look good. And this is where my problem, just in general, that I'm always working against, is that I have a hero complex where I like to become friends with women and then go, like, I have no sense of boundaries, and I like to, like, protect women at all costs. It's, like, actually not that tight, and I'm, like, always working on it with my therapist every week. But it's, like, not tight. But my hero complex kicked in, and I was like, shit, I don't want to freak out Sally. Like, you know what? I just need to get her into my bed, and I'll just sort of put a band-aid on it. So I was like, hey, I was like, I don't want to scare her. So something happened, and I'm, like, bleeding a little bit. Let's just take this elevator down and get to my apartment, and then, like, we'll go to bed and then wake up and be fine. I may have to go to a doctor. She's like, okay. And so we walked, like, 2 blocks up to my apartment, and I walk in, and my doorman's like, yo, what's up? I was like, hey, first things first, we got to get my GF. We got to get her in my apartment. He's like, great. I'll take her in there immediately. And I was like, other question, does this look really bad? He's like, squirting. He's like, oh, shit, that looks messed up. I was like, do you think I should go to a doctor? He's like, yeah, do you want me to call an ambulance? I was like, no, hold on real quick. So I got on the phone, and I didn't know what my healthcare situation was. So I was like 22. So I had to grow up a little bit. So I called my dad, and meanwhile, from my dad, it's like 2 in the morning. I was like, beepo, beepo. I was like, dad? He was like, what's up? I was like, okay, so something happened where my arm is bleeding profusely, and now the doorman wants to call an ambulance. He's like, what the hell? I was like, here's the thing. Do we have health insurance? And can I call the ambulance? He's like, girl, get your ass on that phone and call the help. Call the damn ambulance. Don't you ever call me about something like that again. Of course the guy opens his mouth. I was like, okay. My dad was like, just beside himself. So then I told the doorman, I was like, okay, great. Look, Diego, we definitely got to call an ambulance. He puts my friend upstairs. We call the ambulance. 5 minutes later, the ambulance peels in the front. I have a nice paper towel wrapped around. Diego hooked me up. He's a former Marine. That's my dude. And I get in the ambulance, and this girl's like, so what hospital you want to go to? I was like, what? She must have been tired as hell. I don't know what happened to her. She was like, just tell me what hospital. And again, I wasn't on my grown woman, so I was like, I don't know. What? She's like, you know what? She tells the driver, she's like, take her to Bellevue. And I was like, okay, all right. So we're sitting down, and she's like, yo, that looked like that hurt. I was like, yeah, it did hurt. And back in, and she's like, I like your coat. I was like, okay. So we get to the ambulance. They sort of check. I mean, we get to the hospital. They check me in. I'm in emergency by myself. I think it was like Judge Judy on for like no reason. The sun's starting to rise. I just sat there by myself, and I realized my mom's not there. My dad's not there. I'm 23 years old. I got this new job. This is like my first time that mommy is not here with me, and I'm sort of like, start to freak out. The adrenaline is gone. Like, my friend is gone. There's nothing for me to lean on. And so I go, and I do the x-ray, and they're like, okay, here's the deal. It's definitely broken. The other thing is we have to have surgery. Like, you have to get surgery immediately. We just need to clean your bone, and we need to set it back in place. You're going to go to sleep. And I was like, what? So then at that point, then I started to break down. I started bawling. And I remember my sister was in town, so I called my older sister, and I told them they couldn't wheel me until she got there. My sister, like, flew in just, like, beautiful, like, post-African date night, like, just beautiful Beyonce hair, and she, like, grabs me, she comforts me. And right before we went into surgery, there was, like, this guy who he put me to sleep. You know, who's, like, that guy that, like, does, like, the gas mask?
Anesthesiologist
came in. He's, like, a nice-looking dude. He's, like, Puerto Rican dude. And he's like, all right, so check this out. I just need you to sign this waiver in case you chip any teeth, you get messed up. And I was like, what? Excuse me? He's like, it's just a precaution. And I was like, cool. And for some reason, I like to think I'm invincible. So I didn't think anesthesiology would work on me for some reason. So I was like, great, just so that you know, I don't think this is going to work on me. I've never had this happen before, so make sure you double me up. He's like, okay, just sign, wheel her in. So they wheeled me in, and the last thing I remember is the surgeon being like, okay, you're just going to feel like you're having a nice mimosa on the beach. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. And so I woke up, And I was all bandaged up, and I was, like, in the bed, and I had to stay at Bellevue, which is the most batshit craziest hospital ever, for the weekend. And I had to stay by myself because my sister had to leave. And it was then, like, after I checked out after a couple days that I sort of realized that I needed to grow up a little. I had grown up, actually, a little bit. I had done something medically completely without my mother, which is, like, a really big deal. And I had broken my arm. I had really effed up, but I had also taken care of a friend. So the other thing was that I kind of maybe need to cool it on maybe super trying to take care of people and maybe set boundaries some more. So I checked myself into therapy. So yeah, but that's when I became a grown-ass woman.
Yeah.
That's a great... that is a big moment when the first time you have to do a medical thing without your mom.
Yeah.
It's really sad when you're like, oh, this is on me.
Right.
Like, we in my family, after you get sick or anything, when I was little growing up, whenever we got sick, my mom would buy us a pound puppy. Do you remember what pound puppies
are? Oh, yeah. I'll never forget.
That shit was awesome. But now my whole family calls it, anytime anything bad happens, it's like, do you need a pound puppy? Oh. And now pound puppy is out of control. It's like, do you need a $300 dress from Anthropology? That's a pound puppy.
Appreciated.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, that first time that you don't get your pound puppy, I mean, that's like, you got to go buy your own.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world.
Mm-hmm.
But I do applaud you for taking care of your friend. And, you know, even though it led to an injury, I think you did the right thing.
Thank you.
That's a boundary I wouldn't want you to set again if we were hanging out at a bar.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I won't in that aspect, but that's the thing is that roofies are just so bananas to me. I had always heard about it, but I had never had it up close and personal until that moment. Mm-hmm. But even after it happened, there was no way for her to be able to tell whether it was actually. It's just an obscene, like, crazy thing that happens to people.
It's
all
so
the time.
Easy to deny that it happened to you. Like for someone to go, oh, you were just really drunk, and it's like, no, I know myself, and I know that something was wrong.
Don't marry a man. Don't have a drink with a man. What else shouldn't we do with men?
When they talk to you at a bar, you just go like, you go, nope.
Well, guys, I feel like these were all great different stories, but all brought their own message. Again, not good at transitioning. we're going to do something now, a little crosstalk, crossfire, called Woman-splaining. Again, I did not come up with that title.
Hell yeah.
But again, I didn't change it. So, you know, we called this thing How to Be a Grown-Ass Woman, but telling women how to do anything actually is tricky because we actually looked up on Google. If you Google bad advice for women, 72 million results come up. But if you, this is real, if you Google good advice for women, only 168K. So what I'm trying to say is that as we go forward with this panel, odds are you should not take our advice.
So individual. Advice is so individual.
It's so individual. Heather can actually speak
to
that.
That's not my policy. Yeah. It's not individual.
No?
I know what you should do. That's the only... See, the only individual who knows.
Yeah.
It's individual that way.
That's your brand.
One size fits all.
All right, well, I want to talk about women's voices, or rather, like, specifically what we say. So I want to consider this gem. It's up on the screen from an etiquette guide titled She Manners. It was written by a very helpful man named Robert H. Loeb, Jr. back in 1959. Here goes. If you are a gal who uses frank men's locker room language, don't on this first date. Don't ever. Avoid shocking your date. Even if he uses such language and he has all the guys and dolls in the senior class using it, he wants his date to be better than the rest of the crowd. Thank you.
That's incredible.
So I love this because... obviously I curse like a sailor. But I do feel that, especially being in the business I'm in, I wonder if it's in different areas, but I get very bizarre range of reactions from audience members after performing stand-up of being told that the language I use is unacceptable. Mm. Or I'll feel pressure to be dirty because that's a trend in comedy of like, well, she looks like the girl next door, but she has the mouth of a sailor, and we love it. You know, it's like, so there's...
Your Asian there's, pitch.
There's pressure both ways. Have you ever felt like an invisible force or a direct command from anyone to be like, clean up your language, lady, you know?
I'm directly commanded to clean up my language every week because I write an advice column, and I described it to the... Stella Bugby at the Cut when she was thinking of buying it from the All. I was like, you know what you're buying, right? It's 3,000 words and about a third of them are fuck and fucking, and you're not going to change that, right? And she was like, we know. And they haven't cut out any fucks, but every week I get an email from someone who says, you know, you make a lot of good points, but I feel like your argument would be more persuasive if you didn't use such crude language. Mm. And I'm kind of like, that they kind of almost have me there, but then it always transitions into, if you were more of a lady.
Yeah.
Because they don't,
I
don't, weren't I, such a crude
I honestly
slut
don't
of a person.
Think people are saying this to men.
No, of course not. No. It all goes, my daughter is in a public forum and she's very ladylike. And I think, I never want to be ladylike, ever. So I'm good.
I haven't fallen under any like pressure. Obviously, the industry that I'm in, that's pretty permissive and pretty loose, and thank God. And I don't feel pressure. But my mom, like, still says things to me. Like, I really don't care for when you guys use all that coarse language and
language.
She says coarse language.
Wait, coarse or horse?
Coarse.
I thought you said horse. I was like, yeah.
Do I care for that language?
No.
Horses are such dirty. They have such dirty mouths.
That would have been a creative description for her. But yeah, no, she's totally, I mean, she's like said it like last month. She said it as recent as last month. Like, oh, I don't know. And she's also the one who said like, I don't know if you should, in all these interviews that you give, I don't know if you should be so... I don't know if you should let everyone know about your marijuana usage. Like, no. I don't know if you should be identifying as a stoner. I think that kind of undermines what you're doing.
Identifying
and like,
as a stoner.
Yeah, so that and, like, the language thing. And so, yeah, I've heard it, like, as a direct sort of criticism from my own mother. And I am a grown-ass woman, so I don't care what my mother says. Yeah. I mean, I care, you guys. I care a lot. I go to therapy every week and I talk about it. But I'm trying not to care. And I haven't altered my language at all. Like, I have not altered it at all, but I do feel like there are certain places where I feel like I can feel myself censoring myself and replacing fucks with freaking, and I always feel so douchey when I do that, like freaking, like that. I hate when I say that. I hate myself when I say it. So I feel an invisible pressure. What about you guys? Do you feel invisible pressure?
I
speak a certain
do,
way?
But it's a little different. I do get that pressure. I don't really get that pressure at work just because the environment, we're still like a late night show and we'll just bleep it. Like tonight we taped on the way and I did a bit on the show, on the Daily Show tonight. And one of the things that I had like inserted into the script was baby dick. And I only saw tonight, John, do half a second of like, so it like passed and like made it through, and I was like, okay, cool. But I do have the swearing with my Black English vernacular. Oftentimes I feel like I have to speak like very white, and like sometimes I'll put on like my white, like I'll put on like a white voice. It's really weird. But
well,
it's
that's
with
a whole another. Well, it's a whole another layer of expectation that you're either rebelling against or you know, trying to kowtow to. I mean, I can't
even
imagine.
Like if I go to
layer.
like a meeting, like a Hollywood, a big time Hollywood meeting.
Familiar with
them?
Then
I often feel a little weirded out to be like the way I talk to my parents at home, where it's like, yeah, dude, what's up? Like, you know, I feel more
be like,
do you ever feel pressure to play into it more if you're sometimes, around people who expect that from you?
It's both. Sometimes I expect for people to for me to be like a token, and then sometimes I expect for me to be just like this very prim and proper, like one of the good white ones. I mean, good black ones.
Good white ones. No, Jessica.
That is very unachievable for me. But yeah, so for me, that is like the language pressure that I feel. But swearing, like, no. I mean, we're fucking adults here.
Seriously. When I'm performing and I go into a more vulgar territory and I feel the audience getting uptight, I will either back off of it, depending on how much I'm getting paid. I'm getting paid a lot. I should probably just do what they want.
Right.
But if I'm, but if I'm in a situation where they're being uptight for, and I feel like they have no reason to be that way, I sometimes will double down.
Right. Like on the sidewalk when you're on the sidewalk, like.
Yeah. Just like I will. Oh yeah. Oh, you don't like what I'm saying? I'm gonna go extra deep.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
yeah. And then it can get real bad.
Yeah.
You know, then the angry audience. Like they're just like, why are you assaulting us? But
do you feel like as a female comic you are expected to like always present vulgar?
No, sometimes yeah. Like I think some people want you to do that and then other audiences don't want you to do that. And I'm just tired. I'm so tired of trying to figure it out that I'll just talk about what I want to talk about.
Right.
And I'm not one or the other, and I'm tired of being made to feel. And I feel that a lot from the industry of, like, you need to fit into a box. Mm-hmm. Are you the girl that talks about sex, or are you the girl that can't get laid?
Right.
Make a decision.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, it's both.
Well, isn't that true? I mean, this is kind of like a universal theme, right? Mm. I mean, women, I think, in particular, face the problem of what are you going to be? Are you going to be, you know, Black Power Jessica Williams? Are you going to, you know, am I going to be soft, advice giving, and sensible, or am I going to be a little angry? Well, it actually depends on the day.
Right.
And
the hardest.
I am actually many things. Yeah, many things.
The hardest thing about for me becoming an adult is like accepting gray area as opposed to black and white in my life.
Yeah.
Because it seems like life is like just full of gray, especially becoming a woman. It's like, oh shit! Like there, I will not feel this way all the time, every day.
Yeah.
But that was that's like the hardest lesson.
I think you just said like one of the most important things, like in the context of like growing up and feeling mature and feeling like an adult with wisdom. Gray. Everything is gray. Like people who say otherwise should not be trusted. I have found. Yeah. And that is like totally a conclusion I've come to in my adulthood.
Yeah, there is like they're either like a crazy right winger or a crazy like left person on the left.
You should, and it's also just waking up in the morning and saying to yourself, I don't know what I'm going to get today because I'm a complicated motherfucking person.
Damn, dude.
And some days I'm not as good as I could be. And, you know, that's just the way it's going to be. There's no escape. I'm 45 years old. 20 more years of this, ladies.
But I hear your 40s are amazing. I hear that
they're
the best.
They are. I mean, I'm the happiest I've ever been, for that's sure. Great. I'm still insane.
Yeah.
But now you don't.
That's not going away.
Shit. I love it. I love it. All right, next question. Again, we solved it. We solved for
it.
X. Okay, so this sort of relates to what we're talking about, but socially, I feel like there's pressure to be the cool girl, especially around a group of men who are being sexist. I think if you're in a group of guys and they're like joking around, you're like. And then inside you're like dying. I wanted to kind of drive this point home, play a little sketch from Inside Amy Schumer, who obviously is killing it. And this little sketch kind of speaks to that, to bring up our question.
I am zonked. I need a drink.
Yeah, me too. This week was a shit show.
Let's go somewhere we can get nuts.
Totally. I'm ready to get completely bananas.
Dude, what about bangers?
Yo, totally down for it. But I don't know if Amy wants to go to a strip club.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Oh my God, I'm cool with it.
Oh my god, it's actually my pref.
Oh, we're going.
Come on. Let's go.
I like the dark-haired lady.
She's so pretty.
I like the Asian one.
Watch this. Watch this, you guys. All right.
I am so cool at it.
I mean, my dream horse is a Palomino. Because they look like they're gold. But that's, like, out of my... It's expensive, is what I'm saying.
She goes to night school.
I don't know what happened. We were just messing around, doing some really basic choke stuff, and she stopped moving.
Oh, shit. We have to call 911.
Yeah, right, we're calling 911. Are you serious? No, would you call 911 if it was Jesse, you guys?
Yes.
Stop talking out of your pussy right now. I'm cool at it. Got her legs. I'll get her arms.
I can't take this.
You guys, go home. I got this.
Seriously?
Yeah, I'm cool at it. I'm all by myself to bury this dead stripper. I'll be super mad, you guys. See you at work on Monday. Boo, work. We hate work. Bleh. We love weekends, though. I'll just be here and do 100% of the work, even though at work I make 78 cents on the dollar.
Oh, it's great. I relate to that desperation to be accepted by boys. I mean, I wouldn't kill a stripper, but but if they did, I would probably help clean it up as well. But when you hear a sexist comment or you're faced with some kind of like macho behavior around you, where do you draw the line between acting cool with it or taking a stand? Be real.
I'm always trying to figure that out.
Yeah,
it depends on the day, because you know the shitty thing is that sometimes to get ahead, you still kind of have to play that game a little bit.
Yeah.
I know people that are assholes that are men. That
I don't know any of those. I don't know what you're talking about.
That can say something, and the group will all be like, that's hilarious. It's the best thing. But if I say it, then I'm a bitch. You know, that the line is super sensitive between men and women. But it sucks because I still sometimes have to play the game. And it feels like I am giving up on my ovaries sometimes. It feels like a massive betrayal to like the women who came before me.
Yeah.
But it feels like in order for me to do like a kick-ass job and get to where I want to be to do really dope stuff, I have to do that sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm not proud of it, but that's my super honest answer.
I appreciate it because it's very true.
Yeah,
very relatable.
I think we all relate to that. I do think that as one gets older, I mean, I can only speak for myself. As I've gotten older, I do feel more and more comfortable speaking up about it and changing, you know, the course of the conversation or even calling out the sexism. But then you get those people too that are like, well, I'm just like an equal opportunity offender. Like I've just like, you know, like I say shit about everybody. And then that's like always a weird gray area. Cause then you're like, oh, well they kind of do. And like, it's, you know, they're not like anti-women, they're anti-everyone. And
find ways
to like justify.
They really hate
it.
This one bitch.
Yeah. right.
I had an experience recently where, I was backstage at a comedy show. And I was the only woman, and it was a bunch of my peers who I looked up to and respected. And it was a very twisted feeling I had, which was, so they were all sitting around just shitting on a couple women. And like even saying, going so far as like, I'm a female comic, like acting, like saying shit like that, like that sentence came out.
It was
out
like
of
an Eddie
mouth.
Murphy sketch.
Yeah, and I'm sitting
the
there.
White people, all the black people leave, and everyone thinks he's
and
white.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, this is what it's like when there's no women around. But then I had an overwhelming feeling of joy because I went, they've accepted me. Mm-hmm. They've accepted me as an equal.
Yeah.
And I got really upset with that conflicted feeling of like, I'm truly considered an equal, because that was one of the first times that had ever happened. And I was like, I've fucking made it.
They don't even see my vagina.
Right. They're taking a dump on my head. Yeah. And I'm like, yes! You know, like, but it was really messed up and disgusting at the same time. So, but, you know, so it's like you find yourself in those situations a lot if you're in a boys' club type business.
As an older type of person... Mm-hmm.
Older type.
Just a kind of general
just
ballpark.
Just a little.
Older.
You're really not that much older.
Right. You can say that. Yeah. Wait till you get here and see how you feel.
Okay.
But I have to say that I am more of like a less of a millennial. You're kind of, are you a millennial?
We're kind in the in-between. We don't
like
have
X
a generation.
Y or some shit?
Yeah, you're Gen X.
It's,
are you X? You're a millennial.
You're not really X. No way is Gen X.
What's
up that?
78.
Yeah, 78. Right.
That's nothing. Not, you're, yeah, you're like pointless.
You missed the cut. As a Gen Xer, I just said as a Gen Xer on a panel, yeah. This is hot. This is like my dream.
Hot take.
But as someone who's 45, I'm actually kind of a former trader. I went to Duke University, which is actually a great place. I don't at the
were
time
you on the
when
lacrosse
I,
team.
What's that?
Just kidding.
What did you say?
Were you on the lacrosse team? I shouldn't have brought it
no,
up. That's terrible.
Okay. I have thoughts about that, but see, I was a kind of a trader, but I also took feminist studies classes. And so I walked that line, and I kind of walked the line between, yeah, she's a fucking bitch. But you know, that we live in a patriarchal society, and the only reason that, like, so I'd give these drunken lectures where I was like, yeah, fuck her. You just need to get in there. But you know, the only reason you want to get in there is because you're treating her like a piece of meat, and because of our patriarchal culture. And I actually, when I got out of college, thought that I was going to translate feminism to the frat boy. That was going to be my... And I wrote a statement of purpose. I applied to schools to go to get a PhD and be a sociologist of women's studies at UC Santa Cruz. And my statement of purpose was, like, I'm going to translate feminism to our douchey frat boy bullshit asshole culture.
What happened?
It was weird. I didn't get in. So
not
weird.
Possible. Not possible.
I appreciate the effort.
I wrote a cartoon instead.
Wow. That's great.
So I made jokes. And now I'm a complete outspoken kind of dick about things, generally, about everything. But I don't take stands that much because I'm old. And I'm like, fuck it. People are going to be shitty no matter what.
Yeah, I'm trying to get on that level.
Yeah. When you get older, it doesn't hurt you as much.
That's,
it's like, I can't
wait.
Again.
Everything cuts
tequila.
Me very deeply.
Tequila
and it bothers
is the
me.
Answer.
What'd you say?
Just tequila. Just say tequila.
Tequila. Okay. Okay. I'll start that. That track. But yeah, I that's what I hear though about becoming like a beautiful woman as you age. It's that things roll off a little bit. It sort of matters a little less.
I don't know.
It's supposed to.
Wait,
don't you get so disappointed when someone proves it to be otherwise? Like when you meet someone who's like in their 50s, 60s, whatever, and they're still like really terribly vain, or like they really care about what people are saying. Like,
yeah, let's make it black and white.
I get so crushed. I'm just like, no, we're supposed to be over it by then. That's what I'm counting on.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not over everything.
Yeah, but it seems like you process it.
I'm insane.
Yeah.
let's just set the groundwork there. I mean, I don't want to claim too much.
Audience,
let's ask the audience.
Take a quick poll by applause because this is radio. All right, how many people in here feel like a grown-ass woman, including the men? How many of you feel like a grown-ass woman? Now, good. Now, I'm noticing some people aren't clapping, and I don't want to assume anything, but some of you look older than me. And I just want to say, give yourself some credit, man. You're gonna be okay. Why am I giving advice to an older person? That's what I'm saying. How many people here? Another quick poll. How many people here have felt this like pull of like being in the wanting to be the cool girl, men included? Yeah. One person is staring at me with such rage right now. Of like, I never felt like I had to be the cool girl because I am the cool girl. Oh my God. I actually made a graph, a pie graph one time, a pie chart that was time, a cool girl's time. 5%, a tiny sliver of the pie chart was being cool. And the 95% of the pie chart was attempting to hide efforts to be cool. Because I feel like that's the cool girl trick, is like, that's consumed, it consumes you. If you're going to be a cool girl, it's like the sketch we just saw, it overtakes your life. And
your soul dies. Your soul dies.
Yeah, your soul dies.
Cool girl, wherever you are, your soul is dying.
Your soul is dying. Join us.
We're all dead.
Another quick poll, real quick, before we go to our final segment here. Who here, just, I'm supposed to do this during the show, but I just want to make up for lost time. Who here cusses? Okay, good. There is one woman in this audience that has not clapped once. And I'm not going to point out who it is, but I want to talk to you afterwards. I want to know your secrets. All right, let's go to the end here. I'm going to find the piece of paper that tells me what to say.
That's a really good transition. That's good.
Yep. Okay, here's what we... Okay, so we talked about sexism. We talked about work. We talked about... Oh, here we go. It's our rules. These are the things that we've learned tonight. How to be a grown-ass woman. Rule one, burn down your life. And then, you know, rebuild it, whatever we want to say. Rule two, trust your instincts or your doormans. Go to the emergency room. Don't call your dad first.
Okay.
Rule three, don't trust child stars. I am offended by that rule. Rule four, accept the gray areas. I feel like that might be our takeaway from tonight.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, you said it, Jessica.
Aww.
The youngest woman on the panel might be the wisest. Rule five, listen to your own voice, especially if it's swearing like a sailor. I think these are great rules. And I have to say, I am going to leave here tonight really, I mean, I already feel it, inspired. By all of you, by all of you for listening and filling me with my lifeblood, which is laughter. I appreciate that. Will you guys follow these rules? Yes, no?
Yeah.
Good. What we have done here is not in vain, you guys. I think that we're out of time, correct? Yeah, okay. No one's telling me what to do here. Hold on. There's just a lot of pages that I didn't... Here we go. I wish we had more old things from the 50s, like
Me
rules
too.
For women, like, oh, no! Oh, no, her hair wasn't combed. Now she'll be alone forever, you know? You know those old ads from the 50s, like, oh no, another sloppy shave job. No wonder she doesn't have a husband. Buy this shaving cream. Like, it's like,
right, yeah.
That shit was crazy.
Yeah, that's
how did any women
imagine.
Survive?
I don't know. People are always like, where would you time travel to? I'm always like, fucking nowhere.
No, right.
Nowhere in the past would I be allowed to time travel and live like a beautiful life.
No.
Like, where?
Oh, no, she talked too much.
Bought an extra house guest.
Oh, no, she didn't buy a Hoover. And it's like, fuck. That, I mean, can you imagine that kind of advertising? I mean, we have really fucked up advertising now, but back then, I mean, it was, just, I mean, at least they were honest about it. They were just straightforward. Now it's like just a hint. Like, if you don't eat a hamburger in a bikini... You're nothing. Like, that's the message we get now. It's very subtle. At least then they were like, oh, no. All right.
She's stripping on her breast. Yeah. She's never going to find a husband. Yeah. That ketchup's all over her large, well-endowed
No, she's going to find a husband. She's everything a man wants.
Too much relish in the deviled eggs. Oh, no.
I've always wanted to do a commercial where it's a beautiful model and there's just like a French man's voice, like, and she's just like in a tropical setting and just like rolling around in the sand and just like so beautiful and kind of like playing chase with the camera, like, and then right at the end of the commercial, she just says the words, Calvin Klein. Like, she just has the voice of a troll. I have dreamed of... Patrick, can you make that commercial for me?
We can make that happen.
That would cost so much money, but we could maybe crowdfund that.
Tonight.
We'll get the Jezebel lady.
We'll get the hottest
together.
Woman in the world, Kate Moss.
Oh, yeah,
Moss.
Kate. Yeah. We got to get Kate. Like, one of the Kate. Could you imagine if it was somebody like Beyonce, like being like, mission one, and then she's like, like takes the biggest dump.
I was going to say, if you get a fart in there.
Like Beyonce does an entire 2.5 minute video, and she's like. That would be so dope.
Oh.
Let's do it.
Anyway, guys, thank you. We're going to get on that, that crowdfund right now. I think that's all we have to say tonight about how to be a grown-ass woman. Thank you all for being here tonight at the Green Space at WNYC, and thanks especially to my guests, Jessica Williams, Katja Blickfield, and Heather Havrileski?
Yes.
Woo! Havrileski, yes. I barely knew... Okay. I'm Sarah Schaefer.
Yeah!
Good night.
There you are.